bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into a special edition of a Bet the Board podcast. And I know what the intro says. If you're expecting to hear Payne Insider breaking down the National Football League, well, you're going to be disappointed. We have a very prominent guest in the NBA handicapping community who's decided to take, what, about an hour away from his pillow fort on what he considers Christmas Eve to break down not only NBA win totals, give you some best bets for opening night, MVP, futures, you name it. Rob Perez. You can follow him on Twitter, at Worldwide Wob. Welcome aboard, Wob.
First of all, whose idea was it to schedule Game 1 of the World Series the same night that J.R. Smith is on national television? That's MLB's fault. Like they.
Well, I mean, for a guy like yourself, though, you have to be pretty conflicted because you're a Mets fan, so the World Series actually means something to you. So how are you going to try and be able to allocate these hours on opening night?
This is my nightmare. Like, I'm going to obviously have two TVs on with both games, but my attention, like, people will probably say you're not a diehard Mets fan, like, they're, because they're on TV in the World Series, your attention should be 100% focused. And my rebuttal to that is, have you ever watched J.R. Smith play on national television? That is something that I would miss weddings, babies, whatever for, okay? So it's going to be on, but yeah, I'm a little conflicted as to, like, I'm going to be emotional about two different things at once. Is that so bad?
Well, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the podcast there, buddy, I wanted to let you have the opportunity to let folks know where they can find a lot of your content. They know I'm not a huge NBA aficionado. I know Payne follows the league a heck of a lot closer than I do. And, of course, they're used to listening to the National Football League coverage here, but want people to have a chance not only to follow you on Twitter, to read a lot of your great NBA content that'll available from now until they crown the 2016 NBA champion.
Before I even plug myself, can I snitch on you real quick and just say that Todd thought that Rudy Gobert's name was Rudy Gobert before we got on this podcast? Are you willing to admit that to the people?
You know, full disclosure here, I'm a hockey guy through and through. I do watch NBA with a passing interest. I'll wager on it occasionally, but typically don't pick up full steam until late in the year. So I knew his French origin, and I won't claim to be a
linguist. That's even worse.
By any specs. I know, that's what's more embarrassing. You know, honestly, you go to a school on the East Coast, you understand a guy's French, and you don't know how to pronounce his name. It's like Bobby Herbert, like I used to call him as a little kid, instead of Bobby Hebert, which is probably has Pelicans
Rudy
fans
Gobert
cringing right now as I completely butcher any sort of French surname.
You and me are going to have the Scott Van Pelt, Tim Kirk chin when they start saying things in Baltimore language. And anytime someone brings up Gobert, I'm just going to be like, Gobert.
Well, I mean, you know, you think of the cartoons that used to be available in the newspaper, Dilbert, Gobert, same kind of thing. It's not going to impact the handicapping of the Jazz, but we'll get into that eventually. Now that you've had your chance to take some shots, you want to get your plugs out of the way?
Yeah. You can find me on thebiglead.com, writing about NBA, general nonsense, posting videos, you know, not police chases, but also on Complex. Do a lot of digital media and social media for them during nationally televised football games. Met DraftKings as well, just as a staff writer, and have a podcast over there called the 0 to 100 podcast, where it's pretty much what it sounds like. It's just, you know, three guys that are the equivalent of sitting in a bar just talking sports, and we like to blow things out of proportion with conspiracy theories, and we have a segment called What's Wrong with People. All in all, Big Lead, Complex, DraftKings are the homes for the Worldwide Wob, other than the pillow fort for pillow chase, excuse me, for police chases. That's it.
I was going to say, pretty much you can find Rob everywhere on the internet, and he'll provide his unique take on sports commentary. Not only is he president of the David Stern, Adam Silver fan club, along with Swaggy P, he'll break down police chases throughout Southern California and a number of other sordid topics. And for folks listening to this Bet the Board podcast for the first time, If you're following Rob, encourage you to sign up on SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us on our homepage at toddstake.com. And Rob, before we get into the NBA and we start talking about the best places to make money, a lot of the casual fans, they tune out. Once the season's over, they don't live and breathe the association much like you do. So personnel changes, coaches, players, names, faces, guys that are going to really impact the game, players you think will, you know, change how you should handicap certain teams. I'm going to give the floor to you and let you kind of rattle off some of the names and faces we should be looking for early in the season.
Oh, well, you put me on the spot real quick. It's not a personnel change. It's more of a philosophy change. But the biggest thing that I saw from not summer league, not so much the summer league versus the preseason, the Washington Wizards. You know, a team that I've been really low on, mainly because they have the talent. It's just like it's not being used in the right way. Randy Whitman had a revelation over the summer. I don't know if he went to Joshua Tree and took some mushrooms or something, but he all of a sudden realized that he has maybe the best point guard on planet Earth in John Wall, at least the fastest, right? So what he implemented during the preseason is something called pace and space. And if you watch these Washington Wizards play, like the previous three seasons, Gortat, Nene, they get rebounds, they pass the ball to John Wall, he walks it up and barely gets it across half court before the 8-second violation. Now if you watch these guys, John Wall is standing at half court waiting for an outlet pass, and they're getting shots up within 6 to 8 seconds every single time, and it's increasing the pace of play, and it's really magnifying John Wall's talents as a basketball player, which is transition b-ball.
When you see a lot of that, Rob, not to mean to cut you off, I mean, what do you think that does for totals, and how long do you believe it's going to take odds makers to try and adjust, given that we've already seen a slight move for the Wizards opening night game, a total that opened 202 out to 205.5 as we record this? I mean, are these numbers going to get bet up 6 to 8 points until odds makers finally adjust for the change in philosophy?
To be honest, I'm betting the Washington Wizards overs blind if they're anything below 205. I was betting them blind in the preseason. I'd wait, set an alarm for 9 a.m. right when the lines came out for the preseason, and I just bet the Wizards over, roll over, and go back to bed. They didn't cover in the final game against the Raptors, I believe they played. But it is an automatic bet. And while they may not have the shooting percentage at the current moment to support such a wild over-unders that you usually see with like the Warriors or the Rockets or something, it's simply just number of possessions is off the charts. So just by simple math, you know, just thinking about it, if they shoot not twice as much, but a lot more times than other teams, they're going to score more points eventually. That was just my philosophy watching these guys, whether that's analytical or not. I'm betting Wizards overs blind anything south of 205 until further notice.
And the Wizards and Coach Whitman, though, aren't the only team that we're going to see this kind of change in philosophy headed towards a more up-tempo offense. There's a team and a player that I know you're pretty fond of that you think is really going to benefit and blossom more so than he did last year by playing up-tempo, trying to get off more shots, and potentially making him a focal point in the MVP race.
Wait, who? Oh, Anthony Davis? you can't give me riddles.
I'm trying to open this up to you. When you talk about Alvin Gentry, you say that you want to talk about how fast the Pelicans are going to play. I'm a point guard learning his personnel on the floor right now. It's a preseason podcast for a reason, my friend.
Todd, you cannot present me with riddles, because then I'll take it too like literally, and you know how gullible I am. You tell me it's written in the sky, I'll look up within 2 seconds. But concerning Anthony Davis, I was hoping to actually save this for later in the podcast, but since you
we can kind of tease it a little bit. Anthony Davis, we know his impact. Talk maybe more a little bit about Alvin Gentry's philosophy and what that's going to mean to the team as a whole.
So I think Alvin, like what I've seen from the Pelicans in the preseason, it's like they make Mike D'Antoni look like Hickory High School. Like that's a very drastic exaggeration, and they statistically may play slower than some of D'Antoni's teams, but just watching these guys play, like Alvin Gentry realized, hey, I might have the best basketball player in the world, and he can dunk without jumping. So maybe I should like get him out in transition because he can press square from half court and dunk the ball. So he has turned a system that was just I don't know if this is rated PG-13 podcast or not, but it was a very poor system in place with Monty Williams there. You know, they were on the bottom half, generously saying in terms of pace of play. Now Elvin Gentry is like, just get the ball up the floor. Anthony Davis, run down the middle of the court, get him the ball. That's pretty much their offense right now.
And, you know, for folks that are new to your NBA commentary, they don't know your feelings on Monty Williams. But we'll hold off on that for right now. I don't want to get you too fired up on the podcast. Those guys obviously aren't the only teams changing philosophy. We've seen a bunch of new head coaches, whether it's Billy Donovan making the jump from college to the NBA. We'll see Fred Hoiberg doing the same thing for the Bulls. But any other coaching change really catch your eye and think there's going to be some value on their particular teams, whether betting on them or against them, until they adjust to their new surroundings.
Well, yeah, you brought it up. The most interesting one to me is Billy Donovan, not just because he came from college. You know, he's translating to the pro game. The old Thunder coach, Scott Brooks, like, same situation as Randy Whitman was in. He's got this amazing team that he just didn't know how to use. So Billy Donovan's going to come in just, is it the Chip Kelly scenario of the NBA? Like, coming from a great offense at Oregon, is he going to implement it? Is it going to work? And to be honest, in terms of coaching, I think the Thunder can really only go up. So all the things that they've accomplished, you know, making the NBA Finals, I know they didn't make the playoffs last year, but Russell Westbrook has become arguably the best player in the league. You know, you can certainly make that argument. I'm interested to see just how good this team can be under a knowledgeable basketball mind that knows how to unleash his players. There were so many deficiencies on that Thunder team, even when they made the finals. If they're able to fix those up through Donovan, we could be looking at I don't want to say dynasty, but like they can win a couple titles here. The window's open.
So aside from some of the coaches, of course, you know, a lot of folks, Rob, looking to try and get down early in the season, whether it's on win totals or some of the big postseason awards. We'll get to the awards in a few minutes, but I want to start with some win totals and may as well go with a team that's near and dear to your heart, the New York Knicks. Of course, last season winners of a grand total of 17 NBA games. Their win total this year set at 30. What does the outlook look like for the New York Knicks?
I'm willing to admit that I am not biased is not a proper term here because I'm more bipartisan. Like when the Knicks stink, I'm going to go to the radical left of the Knicks stink. I'm going to make it look even worse than they actually are. But when I think there's potential there, I'm willing to talk about it. And while a roster of Jose Calderon, Robin Lopez, Aaron Aflalo, Carmelo Anthony, even before I get to the rookies, them making a legitimate NBA championship run, it's not going to happen. Even biased Wob is not going to admit that. Why I'm excited about this team, there's no like real statistics that can back this up. Just from simply watching these guys play in the preseason, there's something about the triangle that's working. And I don't know if it's the addition of Porzingis or Robin Lopez, but the Knicks are getting a hell of a lot more easy buckets than they've ever gotten, especially last year.
And when you mention the triangle, you don't mean the addition of Matt Barnes' wife to the mix, do you? You're talking about the actual triangle that'll take place on the hardwood.
And no, I mean, last year you could have put Matt Barnes' wife on the team and it probably would have worked better than some of the guys we had out there. But so the number here is 30, I believe. You know, this thing opened at like 28.5, and there's a reason why it's up there. They play in the Eastern Conference, so that helps. You know, they're going to get four games against the 76ers, which you got to assume they can win three of those, hopefully.
Which hasn't been a foregone conclusion for the Knicks the last couple seasons, mind you.
Yeah, the Knicks are the classic go to Cleveland opening night, beat the Cavs, and then lose by 30 to the Sixers. That's what the Knicks do. And that's why, you know, we're addicted to this team, just because they torture us like this with Stockholm Syndrome. The Knicks at 30, whether you got 28.5 or your book has 30 now, this is my biggest play, is over 30 wins on the season, mainly just because there's something here that works. I'm not ready to explain what it is yet, but the addition of Jerian Grant at point guard and Porzingis playing the apex of the triangle, hopefully that's the right term, there's... Like
don't worry, North Carolina's not revoking your diploma if you got your geometry wrong on this podcast, buddy.
Yeah, well, I didn't have someone write my papers, but there's there like, it's weird watching Melo play with, like, someone, like, guys that he actually, it's, he seems to, like these guys. He's like, distributing, passing. I can't put a finger on it yet. But
so when you talk about the Knicks, then, not only do you like them over, are you talking about them as a potential playoff team?
Oh, yeah.
Are they finally going to get back to the postseason and be, you know, a 7 or 8 seed in the East? Or do you see them with an even higher ceiling than that?
I've got them as the 8 seed. They're not going to win a game in the playoffs, but I do have them squeaking in, and that's a really good season for the Knicks. You know, the addition of Aaron Aflalo, like, we have someone that can actually make corner jump shots when he's open, like, very consistently. Didn't have that last year. We've got the we're going to talk about this later, but we have a potential all-star already in Jerian Grant. This guy is a 6'6", 6'7" point guard that looks like he's a swingman. But, again, the catch is he's a point guard, and he's got vision unlike anything I've ever seen from a rookie. Along with Bobby Portis, I think he's the most NBA-ready guy, ready to go. And this is just from Summer League and preseason. So while the names aren't big, the Robin Lopez's of the world, the Porzingis's, the Aflalo's, even the Kevin Serafins and Derek Williams's, they've just been playing really well. And I hate putting stock in the preseason because half the teams don't even try. But you get a different feeling just about these guys. And that's my basis. And I hope people can at least respect my Knicks fandom enough that when I see it, I think I know it. And I'm certainly willing to call it out when they stink.
And when we reconvene, you know, 2 weeks from now and the Knicks have started the season 0-5, we'll allow you to retract all those fine words about the Knicks. But you mentioned the Knicks and obviously having a higher ceiling, getting some of the young talent that you think they needed to take things to the next level. There's a team right in your neck of the woods. Expectations at the Staples Center, depending on if you're a fan of the Lakers or Clippers, you're looking at a Lakers win total of 28.5. Of course, they only won 21 games a season ago. Clippers win total right in line with where they finished last year, 56.5, 57. Last year, win 56 games. How do we begin to break down these two franchises and their current trajectories?
What a time, if you're going to reuse the term, what a time to be alive, and be living in Southern California with the Lakers and Clippers 2015-2016 NBA season. Let's start with the Lakers. This is going to be the funniest team in NBA history. They're not going to be, I don't know if they're going to be good or bad yet. You know what? I'm willing to say they're going to be bad. If you remember,
I was gonna say it was going to take a leap of faith if you were going to say they were going to be good and exceed the preseason expectations.
I've mentioned this in the past. The Los Angeles Clippers team from the mid-2000s with Keon Dooling, Quentin Richardson, Corey Maggette, Darius Miles, Lamar Odom, Michael Olowokandi will forever be the funniest team in the NBA. I have had that stance for the past decade. This Laker team, even if you haven't watched these guys in the preseason, between Lou Williams, Kobe Bryant, D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, and Swaggy P, you could put 8 basketballs on the court, and it still wouldn't be enough.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out how Roy Hibbert fits into this mix and why they thought he was going to be a key offseason acquisition for him to help their current talent mix.
They with Roy Hibbert, I feel like they did the equivalent of like a force quit when you're really pissed off in Madden. I can't get anyone to sign here with the Lakers. So nothing's working, so I'm just going to turn the system off. And that's what they did with Roy Hibbert. We'll take anybody that's been a somewhat big name at one point in their career.
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. I know you're going on a rant, and I'm sure we'll have a couple more of these before we wrap things up. So continue, my.
Yeah, I need timeouts in between these rants to calm down a minute. The Lakers, the names, they should be somewhat decent, right? I mean, Kobe's past his prime. You've got Roy Hibbert in there, who's a legitimate defensive presence. You know,
theoretically a legitimate defensive presence.
Well, on paper, they should be the same way Citizen Kane was a champion at the beginning of Rocky V. I mentioned this is the funniest team ever. It's just such a mix of personalities that you've got Julius Randle, who looks like an up-and-coming superstar with D'Angelo Russell, but then 5 minutes later, they check in Swaggy P and Lou Williams, who are out there shooting 40-footers, and you're like, well, there goes the 10-point lead in a matter of 15 seconds, and then we're back to being the Lakers again. So it's they need their own reality TV show, this team, because there's potential there in their young guys. Even I haven't even mentioned Jordan Clarkson yet. They have a formidable core. I just don't know how they're going to mix all together. So the number 28.5, at least in terms of total season wins, seems pretty accurate just because these guys seem like they're going to win by 35 one night and then lose by 50 the next. I can't describe it any better than that.
I mean, sometimes there are win totals that are going to leave you a little bit perplexed and don't require an investment. But you talk about the collection of characters, obviously, in one locker room at Staples Center. Clearly, there's a team in the other locker room with high expectations. DeAndre Jordan elects to stay around. We know Paul Pierce, on the tail end of his career, contributed to arguably the biggest moves, not only in NBA preseason history, but maybe in NBA history for what we saw a couple days ago. Chris Paul should be healthy. And clearly, the Clippers have their sights set on an NBA championship with their current mix of talent.
To anyone that didn't see that, Moose, by the way, they're aka a bad beat, it was on SportsCenter or with Scott Van Pelt and everything. The Blazers were up by 35 points late in the first half. 35 points, and they were catching 6.5. What was it? No, it was 5.5. They were catching 5.5. They lost by 6. And like the way the Clippers were playing in the fourth quarter, Doc Rivers had his 401k on this damn game. Paul Pierce made like 5 threes in a row. Ralph Lawler was screaming into the microphone. End of story. You mentioned the cast of characters. This team should be in the NBA Finals between Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, and Paul Pierce. That, like, if you're playing a NBA 2K and you can turn off fatigue and you simulated the season, I would assume that the Clippers come out of the West more times than not. The problem is that with the past couple years with the Clippers, their bench has just been an absolute atrocity. Last year, like, Spencer Hawes was the first man to come off the bench. Or at times, it felt like that when Jamal Crawford was hurt. They thought they solved the problem this year with not only the addition of Pierce, but they brought in Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith. Like, on what planet do you think combining the personalities of Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin, who are notorious locker room divas, with Lance Stephenson, who just tweeted out a highlight reel of himself, and he said, "This is for everyone who thinks Lance is trash." That's a real quote. So he tweeted himself in the third person when he's talking about his own mixtape.
Lance, I mean, it's a nice luxury to have, but you have to worry about Doc Rivers if you're going to be able to get him on the same page as the rest of the team. We know he caused problems in his previous stops. Do you feel his addition to the roster actually gives the Clippers some of that depth that you talk about them desperately lacking at times last season?
It should, but it doesn't. And when you're watching these guys for the 5 or 6 times that they were on during the preseason, Doc Rivers was putting Lance out there at backup point guard. I don't know if it was because he didn't want to like play Jamal or something, or didn't want to play Austin. I watched the Clippers blow like 15-point leads in a matter of minutes every single night as soon as Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith step on the floor. You want to talk about Josh Smith for a second? It took Staples Center about all of 72 hours to get that contagious groan that Atlanta, Detroit, Houston all had every time this guy lines up a 24-foot jump shot. There is no sound quite like it in pro sports than when you can tell that Josh Smith thinks he's on one and he's going to launch a long two. That he bricks 8 of them, but the 2 he makes, he's like, all right, you know, he's got the J.R. Smith syndrome that, okay, now that I made one, that means I'm allowed to shoot 5 more.
So from the total standpoint, then, when you look at a win total like 56.5 for the Clippers, can you make a case that this is more likely to be a 60-win team or a 50-win team, given some of those legitimate concerns you have with their overall depth, but knowing how good their starting 5 can be, assuming that durability doesn't become a question?
Yeah, so in terms of regular season, I would lean the over. I haven't bet it, but I would lean the over because these guys are going to blow the doors off of teams that are any team that's on a back-to-back, doesn't have a solid starting 5, or is just a formidable contender. This Clipper, the top 6 is absolutely stacked. When we're talking about the Clippers, the question that people only care about is, you know, what they're going to do in the postseason, because these guys notoriously just dominate from October through April. So I think they're going to look really good, go on those 15-game winning streaks that they always do multiple times, and it will be a contribution from Lance Stephenson and the Paul Pierces and the Josh Smiths that get them there. I'm just not so convinced that these guys are going to be able to mold together especially with all the drama that's been going on behind the scenes in the front office, like everyone hates each other all of a sudden, at least according to TMZ. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull this together when the spotlight is on them most.
I really didn't think, to be honest, when we started to record this podcast, we were going to get a TMZ reference. So if anybody had a prop bet out there available on it, they did get a chance to cash. And of course, when you talk about the Clippers, Rob, the logical segue goes to the Dallas Mavericks. We know about the offseason antics between DeAndre Jordan and Mark Cuban. You're looking at Dallas right now, an over-under 36.5. Of course, this was a team that won 50 games and bowed out of the playoffs pretty much without a fight last year. You know, what's the upside, some questions, and realistic expectations, honestly, for what Mavericks fans and or bettors can expect from this team?
It's going to be a huge reality check. I cannot fathom the contract that Wes Matthews got from Mark Cuban. And Mark Cuban is arguably one of the smartest owners in the NBA in terms of business savvy. He gave a guy with a torn Achilles like $60 million. People don't come back from torn Achilles. Look at what's happened to Kobe. Remember Mehmet Okur? Like, he tried to come back for like 15 games and then he just quit. You don't come back from an Achilles injury, at least a torn Achilles, and be worth $60 million. And when they put all their eggs, the biggest thing with the DeAndre Jordan bust was that they put all their eggs in that basket. They were going to give a max contract. The Mavs were already close to the cap. So they're like, oh, we got our guy. You know, we're just not going to worry about the rest of free agency here because we don't have to. There's no more players we can add to this. So when DeAndre bailed, they panic signed Wes Matthews and they gave the rest of the money to like Zaza Pachulia and just a cast of characters that you'd see on like a 10th place Eastern Conference team. And you know what? Chandler Parsons, it seems like he misses more games than he plays. You've got Dirk Nowitzki on the tail end of his career. This team is not going to win 36.5 games. I unloaded on the under. And unless Dirk has a blast from the past, there is no way this team is relevant. And I'm willing to stick my neck out there and declare that on October 26th.
And when you look at this roster you mentioned, I'm trying to figure out who the defensive stoppers become. I was a little bit surprised myself, and you know the players a heck of a lot better than I do. So to see them throw all that money at Wes Matthews, knowing how the Chandler Parsons signing worked out, or I should say didn't work out last offseason, that leaves a lot of question marks for sure with the Dallas Mavericks. Fortunately for fans in the state of Texas, albeit not right around the corner, things a little bit brighter, the outlook for the San Antonio Spurs. Last year, winners of 55 games. Their win total sits at 57. Can we make the case that they had the best offseason by adding guys like LaMarcus Aldridge and David West to an already loaded roster, and a player that I think doesn't get enough credit outside of, you know, diehard NBA fans, maybe in mass media, Kawhi Leonard, who's emerging as arguably the best player in the league, not named LeBron James?
That, you took the words out of my mouth. If we're lining players up against the middle school gym wall and we're just having a basketball fantasy draft for a pickup game, I'm pretty sure I'm taking Kawhi Leonard like in the top 10. Like, I'm not going to go through who I'd probably name before him, but I can't name many players that I would take that I would take before him, right? At least not 10. I'm also willing to go as far and say that this Spurs team might be the best basketball team we see in our generation, like ever.
Now, I want to ask you another question too about the Spurs, because I know we discuss it obviously off air a lot of times with Popovich and his unique substitution and rest patterns. How do you go about trying to handicap the Spurs when you're looking to try and maybe bet an overnight line or something along those lines? Typically, do you wait it out to try and figure who's announced in and who's announced out? I know this is a question I'm sure a lot of the recreational bettors may have more so than some of the folks that we have a good inkling. All right, Pop's going to sit guys today. Might want to wait. I'll have a chance to lay 2 instead of laying 7.5, assuming a full complement of talents available.
Yeah, the Spurs are the ultimate betting wild card. So any time that the Spurs are on the tail end of a back-to-back, especially on the road, I'm not going to guarantee it, but you can assume that Popovich is going to give at least one of his big guys, meaning Parker, maybe not so much Kawhi, but Duncan, and he's probably going to include David West and Aldridge this year. He's going to get those guys rest because he knows that the regular, like, he doesn't care if he's the 1 seed or the 8 seed. The Spurs are the Spurs. As long as they're in the playoffs, like, it doesn't matter to those guys. So he's got a plan in terms of keeping his guys healthy because they're all on the tail end of their careers, right? So expect those starters to only play between, say, 55 to 65 total games each. you know, it's they're not going to all sit at once. But again, any time that they're on a back-to-back, especially on national TV, because Popovich loves to troll, you got to think about who is playing for the Spurs tomorrow. The catch is that the Spurs bench is like, it's a system. So they just pick up Matt Bonner, pick up Patty Mills, and put them in. I know they're not as like talented basketball players, but that's what makes the Spurs so great, is that players 1 through 15 just are the Spurs. It's just a,
and you
it's
get
a freaking
and you honestly
unit.
Get, yeah, you get a great opportunity to identify some line value there for sure. You mentioned the Spurs not caring about their seeding. Maybe they should have won an extra game or two last year. Might have helped in Game 7 against the Clippers. Well, but, you know, not something that's going to impact handicapping. Kind of wanted to get your thoughts on a bigger picture thing. How do you feel about Team USA Basketball naming Greg Popovich as the lead man to kind of assume the responsibility? And honestly, the tremendous success that Coach K has created over the last handful of years in charge of that organization.
I feel bad for the rest of the world because they're not going to be winning anything for the next 20 years with Popovich at the helm. Honestly, you or me could probably coach these guys and they'd still win a gold medal. But when you put someone like Popovich in there that's as close to the players and as respected as he is, he's only going to make them better than they already are. And they're already the best team in the world. We all know that. But when you can bring the best out of a Carmelo Anthony, of a Russell Westbrook, and just harness their talents, I'm excited to watch it just because we're going to see peak everybody.
It should definitely be something fun to watch, and it'll be curious to see how the reins get handed off and what kind of transition, if any, there is between two of the better basketball minds. And I know I'm not going to make you say nice things about Coach K being a UNC guy, so we'll pivot off that and talk a little bit about the Miami Heat. Last year, winners of 37 games, the win total this season, 46.5. Do you feel these expectations down there in South Beach are realistic given their current cast of talent and the addition of Justice Winslow through the draft? Or, you know, is Miami a team that we're going to kind of take a wait-and-see approach on in 2015?
To some extent, I get the same feeling about the Heat that I had with the Warriors last year. I certainly didn't think they'd win the title, but you got the feeling, like, are these guys like the dark horse in the NBA? And you look at their roster and their depth chart, and it's an all-star left and right. They've got Amari Stoudemire and Gerald Green as, like, the fifth and sixth guys off the bench. Because you got Udonis Haslem, Mario Chalmers, all the former Heat guys, the Birdman. They're coming off the bench before Gerald Green and Amari Stoudemire. So when it comes to names, it's really hard to find a team in the NBA that can match them in terms of just, you know, on paper talent. Now, Goran Dragic and Chris Bosh still have not played one game together other than just this preseason. Because when Goran got traded to the Heat last year, Chris Bosh had his heart issue where he almost died. So these guys haven't played a real regular season game together yet. And the big question is, can all of these big names come together? And it's not LeBron James and the big three in the past, but I'm willing to say yes. And I think they will make the Eastern Conference Finals, which would put them over the total of 46.5. I personally bet that. But it is accurate because a lot of those names, including Wade, Bosh, Dragic, Amari, even Gerald Green to an extent, they get injured a lot, and they don't have the type of, they don't have the 13th, 14th, and 15th players on the bench to just plug in and be a system. These are more of talented basketball players versus a talented team. That's the difference between this Miami Heat squad and the Warriors last year, or even the Spurs for that matter. But the fact that we're having this conversation means they're there.
Yeah, it means there are expectations down there in Miami. And I think another team in the Eastern Conference that I think is fascinating to try and look at and project going into the season, the Milwaukee Bucks. We didn't get a chance to see Jabari Parker, a top five pick last year, was injured most of the season. You look at a team that maybe a signing that didn't get enough credit outside of main, you know, the tight-knit circles in basketball, them adding Greg Monroe. Can we make the case that the Bucks, winners of 41 games last year, they gave the Bulls a little bit more than I think people thought they could in the postseason, win total at 44.5, that can they be one of the most improved teams in the league this year?
If they're not going to be the most improved team in the league, they're certainly going to be the most fun. And now that the NBA has given the option to fans and viewers, you know, at least subscribers and TV viewers, to you can purchase a team or you can purchase an individual game, I would recommend you making your investment in the Milwaukee Bucks this year. They are my number one league pass team to watch because they're rarely going to be on national TV, but they are so much freaking fun. Between the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo, Did I say that right? I think I
said that. I mean, you're asking the wrong guy for pronunciation, so I'll make you say that 10 times real fast to make sure you get it right, the Gobert reference and everything else.
So between Giannis, Henson, Middleton, Michael Carter-Williams, it seems like everyone on this team is like 6'8" and has a wingspan long enough to touch the rim without jumping. They're young, they're athletic, they don't stop running, and they do like weird Greek freak things. Everything that the Greek freak does is contagious, whether it's chase down blocks, off the ball movement. It's a basketball revolution is what's going on in Milwaukee right now. I'm not sure if it's going to translate to wins yet. There's a reason why their total's only 44.5, and I'm making them sound like they're, you know, the next generation Spurs. But there's something in the water in Milwaukee. You know, they say fear the deer. You can smell blood. You can smell deer blood at this point.
And you know what? The Milwaukee fans haven't had a lot to get excited about lately in basketball. So talking about a team knowing that they have guys that'll be exciting night in, night out, even if they don't win 50 games or exceed preseason expectations, definitely be a worthy watch. And of course, before we wrap some of our win totals discussion, we may as well close with last year's NBA Finals combatants, the Cleveland Cavaliers. 53 games they won during the regular season a year ago. Looking at a win total, 56.5 there. Golden State, obviously, everybody's dark horse, 67 wins. It doesn't feel like that many. Win total set at 59.5. Don't need a ton of detail. We know a lot of the names and faces on these rosters. But what are your expectations for Cleveland with their cast and, of course, Golden State starting the season without their head coach?
Well, with the Cavs in the regular season, the issue is always injuries. And there's a point I was going to make on the Spurs real quick that also applies to the Cavs here, is my bold prediction for the season is that at some point, I think it's going to be right around the trade deadline, that Greg Popovich is going to shut down Tim Duncan until the playoffs. Maybe bring him back like a week or two before, just to keep him healthy and be a DH in a sense, right? This is going to be the start of a trend in the NBA that Kobe Bryant will follow, that he'll sign with a team and he won't start playing until March and April, but he'll play through the playoffs. Just to stay fresh, he won't play any of the regular season. And I translate that to the Cavs in a sense that LeBron James doesn't have this luxury because Kyrie's hurt. You know, Kevin Love's coming back from that gruesome shoulder injury. Who isn't hurt on this Cavs team? The team they went to the finals with last year rivaled that squad with Jamario Moon, Booby Gibson, Anthony Parker. Last year they had Matthew Dellavedova, Tristan Thompson. James Jones was getting finals minutes. The thing with the Cavs in the regular season is like you're betting on LeBron to stay healthy and perform at LeBron levels. How long can this guy just carry a franchise on his back? He's been doing it for like upwards of a decade. So this
and LeBron's had some pretty strong comments already this preseason talking about needing he had a back injection, and he said that if his body he feels can't perform at 100%, that he's going to put, you know, his foot down and take time to rest to make sure he's healthy for the stretch drive, which I think makes going over a win total this high a little bit difficult, understanding that Cleveland, probably like the analogy you made in the West with the Spurs, they don't have to finish as the number one overall seed. They're still going to be the favorites to get out of that conference.
Yeah, and like this, I mean, with this number 56.5, are you betting on the Cavs? Are they going to be benching people at the end of March like they did last year, at the beginning of April? Are they going to give LeBron time off? And I don't know if this team can stay healthy enough to give LeBron the rest he deserves. And you just alluded to it. He's already missed a majority of the preseason because he got a shot in his back. Like, at what point does this guy's athleticism stop regenerating? The dude is like the T-1000 from Terminator 2 when he gets shattered and then like reforms. At what point does that just stop? 56
He continues to play at a high level, man, and I know a lot of people either love him or hate him. I think as a basketball fan, you have to appreciate what he brings to the court, and we can only hope that he can continue the pace that he's on for the next 2 to 3 seasons at minimum. You look at what he did in the NBA Finals. Clearly, that team was outclassed by Golden State, and LeBron did everything he could but will them to a championship.
And this number, 56.5, that means if you bet the over, you got to bet on a 57-25 record. even with LeBron, like, they're going to get everyone's best shot every single night, and that's if they don't bench him at the end of the season to get him ready for the playoffs. They're capable of winning every single game they play, but the case with these guys, once again, as it's always been, is can they get everyone on the floor at the same time together? And so far, the answer has been no, and it's just going to be a bold no during the regular season because the seed doesn't matter for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and you make a good point talking about motivation and focus. It's tough to go over higher win totals when teams don't feel the need to try and go out there and make a statement. No one is asking Cleveland to be the 70-12 Chicago Bulls. Cleveland will get defined by winning a championship, and if they can be the first pro sports franchise in that city to bring them a major title since 1964 when the Browns did it in the NFL.
And if we're talking about injuries, just segueing into the Warriors, one thing people don't talk about last year, what would have happened if Steph Curry's notorious ankle injury flared up at some point, either in the regular season or during the playoffs? That dude stayed healthy throughout the year. Yeah, he had minor tweaks left, you know, they happen just like they do to any other NBA player, but the chronic injury never flared up. This number...
Go ahead. I'll let you talk about the number first, and then I have a couple quick questions before we kind of transition into some of the major awards.
Yeah, so if they won all those games last year, but this was a well-oiled machine that was full steam ahead every single night. What makes the Warriors so good is that they have players that are at their best when they're out in transition, running the ball, running other teams off the floor, and just being the amazingly athletic specimens that they are. I don't know if Steph Curry can stay. I don't know if Steph Curry can do what he did last year again. Not in the terms of basketball. Like, he's amazing, and he's going to be even more amazing than he's ever been. But I don't know if his ankle can handle 82 regular season games and all the stress of the world on his shoulders in the playoffs. I can't see it happening.
And now I'll ask a question that seems relatively simple on the surface, because I don't want to call what Golden State did last year a fluke. I ask you, in all honesty, is this team as good as the Warriors that we saw last year, or do you think that they all put together a perfect season at the right time? Steve Kerr was the master puppeteer and got max effort out of them. Can they duplicate that type of performance in 2015?
Yes to all the above. I think they're that good. I think Steve Kerr is going to make them as good, if not better. But here's the problem, is that the rest of the league, the modern day NBA, is a bunch of cockroaches. Meaning, if there's a nuclear holocaust, cockroaches always find a way to survive. So what's going to happen is the rest of the league is going to get better, and they're going to get everyone's best shot, like the Cavs, every single night. So all of this running and gunning, Steph running to the corners on the fast breaks, everything that made the Warriors great is going to be on film, and it's going to be talked about on the flight to Oracle with every single team that plays them this season. So my question is, if teams know what's coming at them this year, last year it was kind of a surprise because no one knew the Warriors were that good. Now they know, and they can prepare for it and the system. Can they be as good? The answer is yes. But I think other teams in the West got better, which will make them, in turn, get worse. Hopefully that makes sense.
It makes the mountain a little bit steeper to climb. And before we wrap some of the win total discussion and some of the concise previews with these teams, if you had to pick, let's say, two or three win totals that you really like for a lot of our Bet the Board loyal listeners who may want a season-long investment, which would be the top two or three that you'd go after, Rob?
I've got three. My biggest... by far, so if you're in terms of like star plays on a scale like 1 to 5, I would give 5 stars to the Knicks over, maybe not at 30, maybe drop it to like a 3-star. But if you have access to a 29 or a 29.5 somewhere, I truly believe this Knicks team has found it, has just found gold, struck gold in one way or another. And what's funny is we're talking about like, I'm talking about the Knicks' amazing season. All they have to do is hit the number 31. Which means doing the math.
Yeah, 31 and 51 is all the listeners are looking for if they're investing in the Knicks. We're not expecting an NBA championship to Madison Square Garden.
I've got the Knicks as a 500 team, so I'm predicting 41 and 41, and all I need is 31. That is a radical difference of opinion. So my biggest over is the Knicks. I've got two smaller plays on the same scale. Let's say like two stars. I'm going to bet that Mavericks under for the reasons not only discussed, but they play in the West. So while they're still talented, they're going to be going up against the Thunder, the Spurs, and the Rockets every third day. They just simply cannot, whether it's Wes Matthews' Achilles, Chandler Parsons' knee, Dirk's age, they cannot run with these guys 82 times a year. So I'm going under on the Mavericks, and I'm going under on the Portland Trailblazers, despite looking pretty good this preseason. They look like a cohesive unit. Nothing to lose, the world's against us, and no expectations whatsoever. I just don't think they have the talent to win games over the course of a 48-minute contest where there's 100 possessions per team. They're just not good enough. That's clearly my speech.
I mean, clearly it's a roster composition that's a lot different than what it looked like last year, and losing a player like LaMarcus Aldridge clearly changes the dynamic quite a bit. So just to recap for folks, that's Blazers under, Mavericks under, and Rob loves his beloved New York Knicks over the win total. Much stronger at 29.5 if you can grab the number, a little bit weaker at 30. And for those folks just kind of paying attention, not knowing who they heard on the other end of the line, the one, the only Rob Perez, you can follow him on Twitter at world_wide_wob, and you can see his great work at The Big Lead, amongst other places. I know Rob kind of will share that at the end, let you know where you can find some of his great content. Now, and of course, Rob, when we talk on Bet the Board, we go through it all the time in the NFL in our season previews. It's not just reg season wins that we're looking at. There's a lot of big awards and some opportunities to find some value. I won't call it quite like finding a needle in a haystack, but clearly betting favorites, not exactly the best approach. We look at Rookie of the Year. We know Emmanuel Mudiay's number has come down from 9-1 all the way down to 3-1. Of course, Jahlil Okafor in Philadelphia, Karl-Anthony Towns in Minnesota. Their numbers, let's call them about 4-1 current prices at BetOnline. D'Angelo Russell, 5-1 out in L.A. Stanley Johnson, I know he's been the it guy, so to speak. His numbers come crashing down to 7-1. But then you're talking about another tier of players. Maybe there's some value. Your Justice Winslow, Hezonja down there in Orlando. Your boy Kristaps Porzingis, Bobby Portis, who you mentioned earlier in the podcast, being NBA ready. And, of course, Jerry and Grant. These guys all somewhere in that 20-1 range or even higher if you seek it out.
Well, I think the obvious choice here is Mudiay. Despite not being the top two pick, Towns or Okafor, Mudiay is going to have the ball in his hands probably more than anyone on this list. So if you're into like daily fantasy or just one of those guys that likes minutes, you know, there's something good's got to happen if he's got the possession of the ball so much. I certainly can't argue against you in that retrospect against Mudiay, even though that price is a little short. I mean, 3-1 is like... That sounds like LeBron MVP numbers. I don't know.
Well,
if it's
I think
that,
some.
That
I don't get me wrong. I think some of the value has been taken out of him. I mean, this is a guy who opened at 9-1, and his price was there. Of course, that price, you know, crashed once the Denver Nuggets decided to part ways with Ty Lawson, and it looked like the rookie was going to be the heir apparent to running an up-tempo system. And as you mentioned, getting minutes and the opportunity to excel. Now, if he chooses to do so, or if he's so fortunate, you know, that remains to be seen.
By the way, I did the biggest flip-flop on Mudiay because during anyone that watches Summer League, this guy looked like MJ. I mean, he was putting up not only stats, but highlight reels left and right. And then the very first preseason game this summer / fall was against the Clippers, I believe. And I watched Chris Paul put this guy in a blender. Not so much on Mudiay's defense. Like, Chris Paul, granted, is probably the best defensive point guard in the league, was in this guy's grill to the point that I'm pretty sure Mudiay asked out. He could not dribble the ball past half court against Chris Paul's defense. He was turning the ball over like what felt like one out of every two possessions. And he ended up playing better later in the game and everything. But I went from this guy is going to be a runaway Rookie of the Year candidate to I don't know if he's ready for NBA level defense. And he's not going up like most rookies. He's not going up against the other team's bench. He's going up against the most elite position in the league where all the superstars are. And most of them play defense too, at least the good ones.
And we know he's challenged shooting the basketball as well, which I think can definitely hurt his numbers at such a short price. But if we're not talking about him, is there any other favorite up there that has mild interest to you? Because I know there are a couple guys that you've already mentioned. You think there's some long shot value, but any other favorite that you could see worthwhile as an investment?
I want to take D'Angelo Russell so bad, but on this Laker team as being as bad as they are, I don't know if the voters will reward D'Angelo, even if he has an amazing season, just because this team's probably going to stink. You could say the same thing about the Minnesota Timberwolves and Karl Anthony Towns, but there's a difference here. This guy's going to be the best player on his team, hands down, and he's going to be the reason why the Timberwolves win as many games as they do. It's just a little bit different there. My picks are actually guys that are off, not literally, but figuratively off the board. You want to talk about Kristaps Porzingis all you want. He's not even the rookie of the year on his own team. That's going to be Jerian Grant. And I'm not going to go on about it because I did already and I did in our previous podcast. But many of you saw this guy at Notre Dame. He looked like an NBA player. I'm willing to say this is the most NBA-ready player in terms of rookies in the entire league. This guy has it. I would go to war with him. One of the few people that I would want to be next to in war. And that's really difficult for me to pick how many of those people, at least in sports, that I can do that with. Jerian Grant, just in terms of pure talent, and I think he's going to be the starting point guard for the Knicks within a month. Like Calderon is decent, but the Knicks know what they have in Jerian Grant. And it's only a matter of time because Carmelo's even said he wants him out there too. So he may have the ball in his hands as much as Moutier does.
And when you're talking about Grant, he's currently available at 25-1 at BetOnline. Now, there is one other guy who, you know, is a bit of a long shot. Not every book is offering. Real quick, some of your thoughts on Bobby Portis and the impact he can have on Fred Hoiberg's Chicago Bulls.
This guy is unbelievable. If he doesn't win Rookie of the Year, there's a reason why he's 55-1, because he's going to come off the bench. He's going to be this year's Nikola Mirotic. He's going to be that guy that's sixth man off the bench. He's going to come in, play 17 to 25 minutes a game, and he's going to absolutely dominate while he's out there. I just don't think he's going to have as much of an impact on the Bulls squad and the result of the season as much as some of these other rookies, which is why I wouldn't advocate for him as much as Jerian Grant. But I'm willing to say that the Bulls will trade Taj Gibson by the trade deadline in February because Bobby Portis is simply that good, and they can get a pretty good haul for Taj Gibson right now. Bobby Portis is Taj Gibson with a jump shot, with even a three-point jump shot. This guy can fill it up, and I hope y'all see that real quick.
Well, he was definitely polished on the offensive end when you watch him perform at Arkansas, obviously. Making the transition from the SEC to the NBA, not quite the same. And while we're running a bit long on time, I did want to try and get your thoughts pretty quick, Rob, on Defensive Player of the Year, if any value stuck out to you there. And, of course, the most important hardware that an NBA player can take home, the MVP, before we close with some brief discussion on the good old NBA championship and what type of value might be out there in the futures market.
Yep, so Defensive Player of the Year and MVP, they intertwine a little bit for me. And it's like that because of Anthony Davis, but I would, if I had to bet on Defensive Player of the Year, I don't like the numbers, so I personally won't invest in it. But Rudy Gobert, for any NBA fans and or sports fans that have never heard of this guy,
including me before this podcast,
he has a 9'7" standing reach. This dude, I don't even know what to, he's Inspector Gadget and Godzilla's offspring is probably the most accurate depiction of what this guy is. He's not only a monster physically, he's probably as athletic as like a LeBron James, just in a 7'2" form. It's really hard for people to comprehend that, but you gotta watch this guy play. He blocks everything. He tip slams everything. And while tip slamming certainly doesn't help for Defensive Player of the Year, he will be this generation's Dwight Howard when Dwight Howard actually cared about playing basketball in terms of defensive effort.
and for those folks who don't have the odds in front of them, Gobert right now listed as the favorite at 4-1. You can find DeAndre Jordan 5-1, Kawhi Leonard right behind him 11-2. We're talking about Draymond Green 6-1, and Anthony Davis, you mentioned 7-1, maybe some compelling value considering Davis listed at 7-2 to win the MVP.
Yeah. Anthony Davis is my MVP this season. I think he's, I'm not, okay, I'm willing to say he's the best basketball player on earth, but I'd still rather have LeBron James on my team, just in terms of talent and basketball, just, again, talent. I'm taking Anthony Davis over anybody. But that number 7-2, like, I like 7-1 with Defensive Player of the Year a little bit better than 7-2 for MVP, because if Anthony Davis is going to be the MVP that everyone thinks he is, doesn't he have to be the best defensive player in the league?
It's just a question. You have to wonder. I mean, you mentioned it early, what the defensive numbers are going to look like for anybody on that Alvin Gentry-led roster, given that they're going to play a little bit more up-tempo if people are going to try and ping him for potentially being involved in games that may be 130 to 115 if he's not filling up the stat sheet with rebounds and blocks. But what we've seen in the past from Anthony Davis, last year you could make the case and you have a compelling argument. If he was able to stay on the court, he might have been the best long shot value to be MVP. It's just Steph Curry was that good for longer stretches.
You and I had him, and there was that game where Anthony Davis hit the Anthony Davis hit that game-winning three against the Thunder or something. It was like a double-clutch, you know, buzzer beater. And I'm like, I think we have this. And what it was like 20, 25-1 or something. And if he doesn't win it this year, he's going to win it next year, especially in Alvin Gentry's system. And he is as athletic as Rudy Gobert is, but he's going to have to be in the neighborhood of Rudy Gobert's blocks and stay on the floor, like you said, because he's been out with injuries in the past. Any of these guys get injured, you can throw your ticket practically out the window, because there's someone in the league who's going to be healthy and perform at that MVP level throughout all 82 games.
And I think you make a good point, though, talking about these guys, and that's why it's so difficult to try and bet short prices. Most offshore books will have these numbers up throughout the course of the year. If a player starts slow, you'll have an opportunity to identify a little bit of value and jump in, rather than locking up a ticket on a guy at, say, 3-1, where so many things have to go right for you to be able to cash that, rather than rooting for, you know, another player. I won't say rooting for, but another player goes down who would have been towards the top of the leaderboard and have an opportunity to find a guy, a bit of a dark horse, to jump into the thick of things.
Yeah, the I'll never recommend betting short prices. I want to bet Gobert more than anything, just because I know how much of a defensive presence he is. But you're betting on health more than anything with these short long futures, and I'm not willing to give up that much in terms of a payout, assuming that they're going to play 82 games. Durability has become the most important stat for a majority of these NBA teams that are right on the fringe. You need guys that can play throughout the season so you can get that top seed or you can get in the playoffs. Most of these guys don't play 82 games. Damian Lillard playing every single game throughout his career is one of the most underrated stats, more so than points, assists, rebounds, any of that, any advanced statistic. Durability has become the biggest issue in the league.
Yeah, and you need so many of these things to go right. I mean, the amount of grind that these players go through, not only what they're doing through the NBA regular season, but prolonged playoff runs, talking about national team duty, whether it be with Team USA or anybody else. You raise a lot of interesting points. And when you can look at these guys on stat, you know, on paper, you can look at their stats, but if they're not out there for a full season, it makes it tough to win these awards. And what better segue than to talk about short odds? When you look at, you know, potential NBA champions, obviously we know the Cavs have the easiest road coming through the East, and the reason they're listed at 2-1. Golden State and the Spurs, both 4-1 coming from the West, followed by the Thunder at 7, Clippers at 8. And then you get into the interesting mixed bag, and kind of curious to get your thoughts for teams like the Bulls, the Rockets, the Pelicans, Heat, Hawks, Wizards, Pacers, any of those teams that may have a chance to be this year's Golden State Warriors.
The problem with these NBA season-long championship futures is it's pretty predictable as to who's going to win the championship that year. Not one specific team, but there's probably only 5 or 6 teams that I would consider to be legitimate NBA contenders, assuming they all stay healthy. And that's that. Vegas isn't stupid. That's the Cavs, the Spurs, the Warriors, the Thunder, Clippers, maybe the Rockets and the Grizzlies, and then you start getting into the questionable territory. In terms of value, you're not betting the Cavs because that for completely obvious reasons. And if one major player gets hurt, you're suddenly holding the worst possible ticket that you can have. The Spurs, like, I want to bet +400 because I know they're going to be – I know that's – they're my team. I think they win the whole thing this year, and I think they win it easily. That's just how good they are. And I want to bet plus 400, but in terms of value, you and I both know, because we talk about doing this all the time, is we root against the Spurs to go down 2-1 in like their first round playoff series, like they did against the Mavericks the year they won it, so we can grab an adjusted number that's three times as high as it was throughout the year. So I wouldn't recommend betting any of these now, but I would dabble on the Heat. And I would dabble on the Heat not because of how good they are now, but how good Pat Riley is at being a front office executive. It's not out of the question that he can spin some Luol Deng trade with Amari Stoudemire off the bench and even Justice Winslow and bring in like a Carmelo Anthony. That's a very realistic possibility if the salary cap numbers work out and the Knicks are willing to trade their superstar. I'm going to dabble on the Heat for that reason and that reason alone. And I'm also going to dabble on the Bulls for that reason. They can always get Carmelo. Small, very small there. But I'm also taking the Pelicans just because they have the best basketball player in the NBA. Talent is king, the same way that you got to have pitching in Major League Baseball. You know, it's tough to make comparisons off the top of my head, but I'm betting the team with the best player.
I think it makes sense because it's a philosophy issue with the NBA futures. And for folks, hopefully some of the people that are listening had the foresight to grab the Spurs at 12-1 before they made some of their big offseason splashes, bringing in Aldridge and bringing in West like we talked about. But there are teams that start slow. You mentioned what kind of possibilities will exist as we head into the postseason and what's out there. And of course, though, Rob, before we let you go, I know NBA is your specialty. You mentioned your allegiance to the Mets. We're going to need a World Series prediction out of you with those Mets goggles on. And will they be bringing the World Series trophy back to Citi Field?
It's Mets in four.
Mets
in four. And that's not even a biased opinion. This pitching staff is the 2010s equivalent of Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz in the 90s, the 2000s.
You do realize, though, that those Braves additions only won one World Series despite going back to the playoffs year after year after year after year. So yeah, you're going to have to catch lightning in a bottle to do it in the first time through.
Last time I checked, those teams didn't have Cespedes or Daniel Murphy on their team, too. So in terms of just quality of pitching, you've got them from the 1990s. You've got Mulder, Zito, and Hudson from the A's in the 2000s. Not only do we have our big three in Harvey, DeGrom, and Syndergaard, you've got Mets. We've got the best closer we've ever had. I just don't think, despite the Royals having the talent they do in terms of bats, I don't see Volquez, Cueto, Chris Young, who was like the Mets' fifth pitcher when they were terrible, Ventura, I don't see them keeping it together against a lineup this formidable. And they're going to have to hit the best pitchers, the three best pitchers in the league.
You heard it here first then from a man who is an NBA aficionado first and foremost. We're thankful that Rob, you made some time for us on the Bet the Board podcast. Hopefully we can do this a little bit more regularly throughout the NBA season. For those folks new to the podcast, Mondays and Thursdays throughout the fall, Payne Insider, who we gave the night off to for good behavior, to give Rob center stage and break down the NBA preseason and what he sees going into the year. So, Rob, I want to thank you again and remind folks where they can find you, not only on Twitter, but a lot of your great work throughout the season.
You can find me at world_wide_wob on Twitter, Big Lead, Complex, DraftKings. And I'm exhausted. I feel like you just put me through a job interview. This is what you probably feel like, what Laker teammates feel when Kobe Bryant won't pass them the ball or Swaggy P won't pass. I feel like I just had possession 85% of the time. I can barely talk now. Christ.
Well, you know what the hard part is with all this stuff? I have to try and play point guard. I have to keep things moving. I know if we allowed you to, we'd be able to turn this into an 8-hour soliloquy from you with an hour rant or a half hour on pretty much every team in the NBA. So to try and keep people's attention, we just have to keep things fluid. And like I said, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know it's Christmas Eve for you, so you'll be awake till the wee hours of the morning with excitement, sitting in your pillow fort in anticipation of what should be another fantastic 2015-2016 NBA season.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and hopefully the listeners out there made a little bit of sense. And if this is your first time listening to me, I usually don't make much sense, so the fact that I was able to keep it together for this long is probably one of my best achievements to date. So.
We're proud of you. And for folks that are listening to the podcast for the first time, encourage you to sign up SoundCloud, iTunes, Bet the Board, also available at toddstake.com. For Rob Perez, I want to thank him again for taking time out of his busy day to jump in here, talk a little NBA with us. We'll be back Thursday with normally scheduled programming to break down the Thursday night football game between the Dolphins and Patriots, along with all the Week 8 action that lies ahead. So for Rob Perez, Pain Insider, who's not with us tonight, I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. Best of luck, and hopefully come the end of the NBA season, we'll see you at the window.